Remember, smart card will best express a perfect case, your customer. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting story of mystery and intrigue starring Claude Rains. For more than a third of a century, quality has been a habit with the makers of Hallmark cards. They are the smart cards. They are the kind of cards you can be proud to send, proud to receive. That's why, through the years, Hallmark cards have been America's favorite greeting cards. So if you want to send the very finest, look on the back for the three identifying words, a Hallmark card. These three words are your assurance of finest quality. They tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. And now to preside over the Hallmark program this evening is a young man well known to Broadway, both as actor and producer, Richard Talmer.
Thank you, Tom Shirley, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If ever a man knew his own mind, it's Claude Rains. Where most actors would gladly roll a hoop from Broadway to Hollywood for a picture contract, Claude Rains kept saying no until they told him that they had just the part for him, the lead in The Invisible Man. And where another actor would have been indignant at this insult to his profile, Claude Rains took the part and scored a big hit in it. And where a lot of successful movie actors loll around marble swimming pools, Claude performs manual labor on his Pennsylvania farm. He's come up from that farm to be with us tonight. And we know our own mind about that. We're glad. The Hallmark program proudly presents Claude Rains in Murder in the Big Bow by Anthony Abbott. One dismal morning, with a low fog hanging over the city of London, a doorbell rang long and continuously in the house of a man named Grodman. Grodman was a retired Scotland Yard inspector who had achieved considerable fame both as a detective and as the author of a bestseller entitled Criminals Have Caught. So it was only natural for the woman next door to come running to him for help at the plus sign of trouble.
Mr. Grodman, you can't come here, Mr. Grodman. Look, did you take? You come down here and answer your door.
My dear woman, please take a finger off that door. What am I trying to do?
Begging your pardon, Mr. Grodman. I'm sorry about the bell, but I just had to speak to you.
It's 5 in the morning. Don't you know it's a criminal offense to wake me up at 6:30?
Don't do it against us. Never against us. If I had to have a son, it's Mr. Constance.
What's Mr. Constance?
On your border, sir. You know him, don't you? That nice young man from the West End.
What about him, Mrs. Grodman?
Oh, it's awful, Mr. Grodman. We must come over and see him right away. He's dead, poor chap. Dead.
Well, if he's dead, what's there to do and see him? Well, you say call in the doctor or the police.
But you're the police.
I'm not anymore, Mrs. Bradham. I've been with the yard for 2 years now. Calm yourself and get in touch with an undertaker.
Oh, I can't do anything, Mr. Bradham. You know, I'm mortally afraid of the dead. Oh, won't you help me?
All right, I'll help you.
Oh,
give me a chance to get in some clothes and I'll be over to the place in 5 minutes.
Thank you ever so much, Mr. Grodman. But if it's just the same to you, I'll wait for you right here. It's up here on the second floor, Mr. Grodman. I was supposed to serve him his breakfast at 6:30, but he never came out of his room.
Which one is it?
This one, sir. You see, the tray's still there. I left it on the floor when Mr. Constant didn't answer.
What makes you think he's dead, Mrs. Bradham?
Well, he must be dead. Something. The door's locked on the inside, and he won't open it.
I see. Mr. Constant. Mr. Constant.
Oh, I'm not louder than that, Mr. Grodman.
Did you try the door?
I did everything, sir.
Well, in that case, you'd better let me have your key.
My key won't open this door, Mr. Grodman. Not when it's locked on the inside. You'll have to force your way in.
Perhaps you're right.
Be careful, sir. Don't arm yourself.
That's coming now. One more try. There we are. Mr. Constant? Mr. Constant?
Isn't he in there?
He doesn't seem to be... Well, just a moment, Mrs. Bradham. Don't come in here.
Mark, what's wrong? What's up?
Don't come in here, please. It's not a pretty sight.
Over there, don't let me see it.
Now, quick, Mrs. Bradham, you run downstairs and call the police. His throat's been cut.
You mean he committed suicide?
Well, I can't say that as yet. It might be suicide. On the other hand, it might be murder.
The pity of it, Mr. Grubman. The terrible pity of it.
Now, dry your eyes, madam. You can't be of any assistance to Inspector Corley. She bursts into tears every time he asks you a question.
But he was such a nice young man, Inspector. Not a bit of fuss to him. Never a day behind on his rent.
Well, when did you see him last, Mrs. Bedham?
Last night, about 8 o'clock. I turned his bed down over there. But little did I expect.
I know. Were the windows open when you left, Mrs. Durham?
I don't believe so, sir. Can't be sure, but I think they were locked, just as they are now.
You didn't touch them this morning, did you?
How could I, sir? I haven't been in here this morning. Not until you called me.
She's right, Inspector. I didn't allow anyone into the room until the police got here.
All right, Mrs. Durham. I guess that'll be all for the present.
Oh, thank you, sir. And I do hope you find out what happened to poor Mr. Constance. Yeah. He was such a nice young man.
If that woman slips again, I'll strangle her with my bare hands.
Patience, patience, Mr. Brodman. Even if you are an orphan now, you must remember you're still a Scotland Yard man at heart.
I'm nothing of the sort, Inspector. I never could stand talk to women, and I wouldn't now if she found his case once so baffling.
Well, baffling? Don't tell me the great Mr. Brodman is subtle by this affair.
Now, listen to me, Corley. We've been over this room with a fine tooth comb. And the razor or the knife that killed Constance still hasn't turned up yet.
Well, that doesn't alarm me particularly.
Well, it should. Now, if Constance committed suicide, that razor would be here. A man that slashes his own throat hasn't time to conceal the weapon he did it with.
Granted, but Constance might have been murdered.
If Constance were murdered, how did the murderer get into this room? Through the locked window? Or through the door I had to break down?
Well, I fail to see your point.
You usually do.
Now, Robin, don't be sarcastic. After all, this isn't your case. And in spite of the high opinion you have of yourself, the yard still manages to function without you.
Don't change the subject, Corley. This isn't a matter of personal rivalry anymore, now that I've left your organization.
Sorry to contradict you, but you didn't leave the yard. You were retired. The old man and I were afraid you were slipping. That's why we retired you, so you could sit at home and write books.
Well, it wouldn't hurt you to read some of those books, especially at a time like this.
Well, don't worry, Godwin. I'll handle this case myself, thank you. Solve it according to my usual methods.
Very well, Mr. Inspector. I'll bow out. But if you handle this case according to your usual methods, I doubt if you will ever solve it. All right. I'm coming. Oh. Yes?
Mr. Gordon?
Oh, naturally, yes. That's what my mailplate says, but...
Well,
I... Come to the point, young woman. Your name is Viola Dean. You live in Berkshire, and you've come to see me about the Constance case.
Good, Gerald. How did you know?
I telephoned twice today. My maid told me all about it. Now, come in, won't you?
Oh, thank you.
Fine. You're a pretty little thing, aren't you? Don't be frowned so much.
Mr. Brockman, would you help me? You see, I know something about the case. Eric Carson was a friend of mine.
Oh.
One time we were very fond of each other.
How long was this?
Quite recently. That is, we broke off quite recently. Just about a week before the murder.
What murder?
Why, the murder. Eric was killed, wasn't he?
I don't know, do you?
Well, I understand he was. At least Inspector Corley led me to believe.
Oh. So Inspector Corley's been able to see you,
hasn't
he?
Yes.
I was wondering how long it had taken to find out about you and Eric Constance.
You knew we were seeing.
Don't be surprised, young woman. Mrs. Bradham told me all about it.
Mrs. Bradham?
The landlady. She not only has a big mouth, but long ears to do with.
Well, I have nothing to hide.
In that case, Inspector Corley won't harm you.
But, you see, I wasn't worried about myself. It's Tom I was thinking about. Tom Mortlake.
Who's Tom Mortlake?
Why, a friend of mine.
Another friend?
I'm sorry I said that, Mr. Gutman. He's more than just a friend. Tom's the man I'm going to meet.
No, that's more
like it. And tell me, were Tom and Eric rivals for your hand, so to speak?
Well, more or less. Oh, but Tom didn't kill him.
Now. Just you answer my questions, you see. What have we got on?
Nothing as yet, except the fact that he and Eric had an argument the night before the murder.
Will you please stop calling it a murder? You'll have me believing it was in a moment. Where did the argument take place?
In Tom's apartment, about 7 o'clock in the evening.
He told you this?
No. I was in the apartment when it happened.
I see. Do you suppose I can find Tom there now?
Yes, I believe he's home, Mr. Gardner. But will you go over and see him?
I will, if you answer just one more question.
What is it?
Tell me, Lucie, what makes you so sure Tom Mortley did not commit a murder?
I know he didn't, Mr. Gardner. I know.
It was a mistake, Mr. Cartman, a stupid mistake, and there's nothing I can do about it now.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Tom. If a man lies to a police inspector, he has a right to rectify that lie.
Don't you see, sir? It won't do any good. I shouldn't have lied in the first place.
Why did you?
Well, I was afraid. I read about Eric's death in the papers the morning it happened. I was sure the police would come to me sooner or later because of that argument we had the night before.
Well, you made up an alibi for yourself.
Well, I had to do something, Mr. Godman. I had no way of proving I didn't kill Eric. I couldn't prove I was right here in my room when it happened, so I said I was out of town.
And Inspector Corley tipped you up.
Up and down and every which way. I never made such a mess of anything in all my life.
Well, now, I wouldn't worry too much about it if I were you. As long as you're not hiding anything else from me.
You're not, are you? Well, there is just one more thing I haven't told you about.
Mm-hmm.
I used to live at Mrs. Braddon's rooming house.
When was this?
Oh, about 6 months ago. I have the same room Eric was in.
Well, I must say, that's a strange coincidence.
Coincidence? It's worse than that, Mr. Godman. Unless you can help me, it's the one thing that's going to put a noose around my neck.
You'll be a fool, Tom. This is England. You won't hang for a murder you didn't commit.
Mortley?
Yes?
Open up, Mr. Mortley. Inspector
Corley
here.
Just a moment. Yes, Inspector? What is it?
Come with me, young man. You're wanted for the murder of Eric Constance.
Claude Rains will be back in just a moment with the second act of tonight's hallmark drama from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. And now, here's Dick Alvin. You know, when a woman is seated in a restaurant, she almost always drapes her coat over the back of a chair. And I wonder if you've ever noticed how many other women casually glance at the label in her coat. Yes, most everyone notices labels. In greeting cards, too, it's natural for folks to look on the back for the mark of the maker. And when you send or receive a card identified by the word a Hallmark card, you can be proud of it. Those three words are a sign of outstanding quality. Because for more than a third of a century, creating cards of finest quality has been a habit with the makers of Hallmark cards. Yes, the three identifying words, a Hallmark card, tell your friends you cared enough to choose the very best. So when you select cards for any occasion, always look in the back for the words, a Hallmark card. These three words, like sterling on silver, are your assurance of highest quality. You will find Hallmark cards on display in America's finest shopping stores. So when you want to send a card, always do what discriminating folks are doing. Go to your friendly Hallmark dealers for a Hallmark card. Because those three identifying words, a Hallmark card, tell your friends you cared enough to choose the very best. Standing on opposite sides of a wire screen, Tom Mortlake and his visitor, Mr. Grodman, converse as best they can in the prison where the young man is being held for murder. Presently, a guard appears to terminate the interview.
Time's up, Mr. Grodman.
All right, Dan. I was just about to go anyway.
So, Will you tell Vara I was asking for her?
Why, of course, Tom, and you won't have to ask for her very much longer. With any luck at all, I'll have you out of here this afternoon.
I'm ever so much obliged.
Not at all.
This way.
Thank you.
Well, well, Mr. Rodman, actually.
Well, well, Mr. Crawley, I presume. You're just the man I wanted to see. Come here, you old goat. I've got to talk to you.
Well, for heaven's sake, man, you don't have to catch me by the collar.
You're lucky I don't grab you by the throat. Listen to me, Crawley. Have you gone completely out of your mind?
I beg your pardon?
Don't stand there with your mouth gathering air. You know what I'm talking about. That Mortlake boy. Are you seriously charging him with the murder of Eric Constance?
I am.
By what right? You can't even prove a murder was committed.
Well, perhaps I can't just now, but I shall by the time we go to court.
Court? You have the audacity to go to court on the flimsy thread of evidence you've strung together?
It's not as flimsy as you think, Rodman. Mortlake had a key to the murdered man's room.
Oh, he killed him with it, I suppose.
No, he didn't kill him with it, but he might have used it to sneak into Colston's room and lock the door from the inside.
Nonsense. If Mortlake had locked himself in, he couldn't have gotten out.
Well, not necessarily. There's such a thing as leaving through a window and locking it from the outside.
Have you ever performed this feat of legerdemain?
No, but there are people who can. As a matter of fact, I plan to have one in the courtroom when we go to trial.
Crawley, you're deliberately trying to frame this boy on insufficient evidence, and if you persist in going to court, I shall disgrace you in public.
I don't believe you can, old man. Either as Rodman the author or as Rodman the former inspector of Scotland Yard.
Listen to me. On page one of my book, you'll find three questions which must be answered before a murder can be solved. When? Where? How? Now, do you know when this so-called murder was committed, Mr. Inspector?
Well, approximately, yes.
What time?
Well, according to the coroner's report, the time of death was established at 7 o'clock in the morning.
You're quite sure it was 7 o'clock.
Right? Positive.
I see. Well, now, if that's true, Tom Mortlake wouldn't have had time to commit the murder and get away without being seen.
Why?
Because at 7 o'clock on the morning in question, I had already broken into the dead man's room.
Any news yet, Mr. Crodman? Is the jury still?
No, Miss Dean, don't worry about the jury. It takes time to deliberate a case of this sort. After all, a man's life is at stake.
Mr. Crodman, if anything happened to Tom, I think I could die.
Now, don't talk that, my girl. From a professional standpoint, the trial's been a farce from beginning to end.
You think so?
Why, of course. The Crown didn't prove anything. A lot of hocus-pocus about locking a door from the outside. Grandstand play, that's all that is.
But suppose it worked?
It cannot work. Without the murder weapon, Crawley hasn't got a leg to stand on, and that's why he put on such a big show. To save his skin at the Yard. The old butterhead. If he hadn't his sense, he never would have taken the case to trial.
I heard you, Mr. Crawley.
Well, I'm delighted you did, Mr. Inspector. If you'd listened to me in the first place, you might not have had all this trouble.
What trouble?
Don't lie to me, Crawley. It doesn't become you. You know very well this Mortlake affair will finish you at the Yard.
You still think he's innocent, Crawley?
Innocent? I'll stake my professional reputation on it.
You'd better not. Tom Mortlake was just convicted of murder.
Talbot, I beg of you, don't allow this verdict to stand. If that boy goes to the gallows, it'll be the greatest miscarriage of justice in the history of England.
I can't say that I agree with you, Mr. Rodman, but even if I did, what can I do about it?
Any number of things, sir. As Home Secretary, you can set the verdict aside. You could declare a mistrial. You could pardon the prisoner, and you could arrest Inspector Crawley for willful and deliberate misuse of his knowledge of the crime.
Yeah, no. I can't have you say such things in my office. Tom Mortlake was given a fair trial. Mortlake was convicted by a jury of his peers.
Bakers, Sir Talbot. Bakers, tailors, laundrymen, candlestick makers. These are the men who convicted Mortlake.
Sir, in this country, the opinion of those men is the law of the land.
But if the opinion of our countrymen is what you want, why don't you look at this petition? It's signed by 10,000 of our citizens. And every one of them a sympathizer for Tom Mortlake.
I'm sorry, Mr. Grodman, but petitions of this sort have no standing in our court. The execution will take place at dawn.
A cup of tea, Mr. Grodman?
Thank you, Mrs. Bradham. Good
make it.
Not at all, sir. I'm glad to be of service to you, especially at a time like this.
Yes. You seem to be quite nervous, Mrs. Bradham.
Good heavens, I'm petrified. I don't know what I'd have done if you hadn't called me over here and asked me to sit up with you. I never could have spent the night alone in my own house.
What would you have done?
Well, I don't know. I just can't help thinking about that nice young man.
Which nice young man?
Well, both of them, I guess. Except that it's hard to think of a convicted murderer as a nice young man.
Why? Don't nice people ever commit murder?
Oh, I shouldn't think so, Mr. Grodman. Well, heaven's sake. What are you staring at me for?
I wasn't staring at you, Mrs. Bradham. I was just peering into your mind.
Goodness, what's that?
Telephone, Mrs. Bradham. Now, don't shake so hard. Get in. Yes?
Mr. Grodman, this is Violet Keith.
Oh, yeah, yes, my dear?
It's no use, Mr. Grodman. The warden won't do a thing.
I see.
Oh, isn't there anything else to... Isn't there any way we can
get him? No, don't cry, Viola. It isn't over yet. Not yet.
What do you mean?
I mean there's still a way of convincing Sir Talbot that Tom isn't guilty.
How?
By getting a confession from the one who is guilty. Mrs. Bradham, quick, get your coat on.
What?
Get your coat on, I said. You and I are going to the Home Secretary's office to free an innocent man. Open up.
Good heavens, Robin, what's the meaning of this?
Oh, stand aside, Mr. Corley. Mrs. Bradham and I have got to see Sir Talbot.
See me at a time like this? We've got our hands full tonight.
Yeah, but I've solved the murder, Inspector. I know who did it and exactly how it was done.
Robin, will you get out of here?
What's the matter with you, Mr. Corley? Don't you want to see justice done, or are you afraid it'll ruin your reputation at the Yard?
Well, you blackguard, you're stalling for time. You haven't any new evidence.
Haven't I? Mrs. Bradham, turn the razor.
What razor?
This one, sir.
White. What on earth is that?
That, Sir Talbot, is the murder weapon. The razor that killed Eric Constant. An examination of the bloodstains will prove it beyond any doubt.
Where did you get this, Grodman?
I found it in a coat pocket of the suit I was wearing on the morning of the murder. The murderer put it there.
But it is preposterous. You were with me on the morning of the murder.
Exactly, Mr. Inspector. I was with you and Mrs. Bradham. But you see, Mrs. Bradham was downstairs, phoning the police when the murder was committed.
Good heavens, Grodman, have you taken leave of your senses?
Not at all, Mr. Corley. You know yourself what an unusual case this is. Only someone who's spent a great deal of time at the Yard can understand the purpose of this crime, the insidious reason it was committed.
What are you driving at?
Revenge, Mr. Inspector. The murderer was obsessed with the idea of getting revenge on the Yard because the old man didn't think he was much good anymore. That's why he wanted to leave them with a case that just couldn't be solved. The perfect crime.
Robin, are you out of your mind? Do you think I killed Eric Constant?
If I thought you killed Eric Constant, I would not be here, Mr. Inspector. Don't you understand? Eric Constant wasn't dead when I broke open his door on the morning of the murder.
What?
He was sleeping peacefully in his bed under the influence of a drug he'd been given the night before.
Mr. Grodman, if Mr. Constant wasn't dead when you opened the door, when was he killed?
Immediately afterward, Mrs. Bradham. I knew you wouldn't step into that room after what I told you. And when you went downstairs to phone the police, I committed the murder.
Good Lord, why?
Why? Because I never got over being retired by the Yard. I wanted to see you with your squirm and fume over a case you couldn't solve. I counted on your stupidity, Mr. Inspector, but I never thought you'd be stupid enough to convict an innocent man.
Thank you, Claude Rains, for an exciting performance. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rains was born in London, not very far from the scene of tonight's Hallmark drama. But many years ago, he became a naturalized American citizen. I've sometimes wondered what prompts a man to do that, and now I have an opportunity to find out. Would you mind telling us, Claude?
Yeah, I'll tell you what prompted me, Dick. It's quite simple, really. I love this country. I think there's a kind of special devotion that a man gives to the nation of his own free choice. I'd feel a great deal the same way about America as a celebrated French writer, André Maurois, feels about America, as he expressed it in the Reader's Digest. I embrace America. I salute its courage and audacity, its kindliness and goodwill, its turbulent energy and unquenchable zest. I love America because I find here freedom and discipline. Crises that drive other people to revolution are solved here by orderly, democratic methods. I think I love your country because it is the great hope of mankind. I surrender my affections to America because of its unconquerable habit of laying down its life and treasure to maintain the forces of good in the world. Against the warm earth of America, fertile with new strength and promise, I lay my heart to beat.
Thank you again, Portland. Here's a suggestion to help you in choosing your Christmas cards this year. Go to your friendly Hallmark dealer for Hallmark Christmas cards. You can select your cards quickly or at leisure. And if you want his help, you'll discover he's glad to assist you in suggesting just the right cards for you from his wide selection of Hallmark Christmas cards. And remember, at Christmas, as always, there's an extra satisfaction in sending cards identified by the three words, a Hallmark card. For those three words, tell your friends you cared enough to choose the very best. You're cordially invited to be with us again next week at the same time for another fine, dramatic program brought to you by the makers of Hallmark greeting cards, America's favorite greeting cards. At that time, you'll hear the tender and inspiring love story of Nathaniel Hawthorne and his wife, Sophia. In order to cast these exacting roles, Hallmark has drawn upon both Hollywood and the New York stage. From Broadway, we have the brilliant young star of Dreamgirls, Live Spirit, and Yes, My Darling Daughter, Kayla Stoddard. And from the motion picture capital, by way of the Army Air Corps, we're presenting one of your favorite leading men, Gene Raymond. Claude Rains can currently be seen in the Warner Brothers picture, Deception. Murder in the Big Bowl was dramatized by Robert Sloan from the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Lowe, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtful taste, your thoughtfulness. Tom Shirley speaking, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. The WBBM Air Theater.